Hello, everyone, and welcome to the last episode of America's Conservative Podcast, at least for now, at least for the summer, at least until September of 2017. Going to be using this time that I've been doing the show to work on a true crime book that is going to be an encapsulation of all of the cases that I've covered on my other show, Unfound. I thought it was something that needs to be done. I couldn't put it off any longer. Because the book that I'm going to put together, there's no book like it out there right now. And I've done my fair amount of research. This book is going to be large. It's going to be a lot of words in it, going to be a lot of pictures in it, going to be a lot of maps in it, a lot of information in it. It's going to cover probably in the end about 40 some cases at least. And it's going to be the first year of all of the cases that I've done on the other program, which comes out every Friday. So it comes out today. My next episode comes out today. And I thought it was something that's important to do, to put the politics on the back burner, because that program is making some progress. It really is. It's drumming up some new leads and some cases that have frankly been forgotten about by police departments. And it's getting listeners involved with the guests that I have on the show. And some of them are working together to continue to raise awareness about the disappearances of men and women from California to New York, here in Florida, Indiana, Louisiana, Arkansas, Texas, all over the place, Utah, all over the place. And because of the way I think about that program, as you know, a lot of people don't listen to podcasts. A lot of people don't even know what they are. They don't have iTunes. They don't have Podomatic. They don't have Stitcher. They don't, you know, it's just not something. It's not that they don't listen to music or listen to talk radio or anything, but you start talking to a person about the word podcast. For example, I don't think my parents would have any idea what a podcast was unless I did them. And so, being that I know that, and being that my goal is to solve cases, that means that that program needs to expand outside of the world of the internet. Outside of the world of little pixels and kilobytes going to people's computers. It needs to be in all media forms. If the goal is to solve cases, then it needs to be in all media forms. So I'm converting that program. I'm going to, of course, continue to do the podcast, but it's going to be, the addition is going to be this book, which is going to be a rundown of all of the cases that I covered in the first year. And it's going to be meant, I'm sure a lot of people who listen to the podcast are going to get the book as well, and that's great. But there are going to be a lot of people who have never heard of Unfound, who are going to happen upon that book on Amazon or wherever. And you know, their awareness is going to be raised, because I can't reach those people any other way. If people aren't listening to podcasts now, I don't know, being that they've been popular for a while, I don't know what else can be done if they're not listening. So you have to go find them, and you have to go meet them where they are. And where those, I think, types of people are, it's more likely they're going to run into the program in the Unfound and those cases if I put it in a book form, other than just waiting for them to happen upon the podcast and be familiar with the technology and download an app and sign up and subscribe and everything else. So that's my thoughts. I don't know of any other true crime podcast hosts or doing books about the cases they've done. I don't know, but it's going to be a lot of work. And it's probably why probably most other shows have not done that. But lucky for me, I'm going to have some help in this. And really the hardest part is going to be the transcribing of all the interviews that I've done. And that's going to make up, you know, 80% of the book. Most of the pages are going to be taken up with those. And I'm going to be having help doing that. So what I have to do is work on everything else. I have to work on the pictures and the maps and accumulating all the information and writing my summations and ideas and theories and thoughts on each case. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a huge book. I don't even know how many words it's going to be or pages, but it's certainly going to be the largest book of unsolved mysteries, unsolved disappearances. I don't anything unsolved murders, whatever. Put it, pick any category. It's going to be the largest book ever, and it's going to get done this summer. I have a lot of work to do, and that work is going to be taken up every morning and into the afternoon of when I do this program. It's just the way it has to be. Just the way it has to be. So I come to you today telling you all that so you'll know where I am. But I also come to you today with no notes. As you know, I do use a few notes for this program. And in fact, I have notebooks and notebooks full of words and little sentences that I've accumulated. Maybe that'll be part of my memoir one of these days, if I ever feel like writing one, you know, if anybody gives a dang. And I keep all these notebooks, and they go way back. But you should also know that I don't, when I'm doing my program, I don't look at the notes too much. I look at the next news item I want to talk about, but by that time, I've already had the thoughts organized in my head, and then all I have to do is tell you about them. So even though I have the notebook in front of me, I hardly ever use it. But today, I guess you're just going to have to believe me, I did not do any notes. I don't have a notebook open, nothing. So this is going to be more of a stream of conscience, or stream of consciousness, whatever the word is. Type of show, but I think I know, you know, what I need to say and what I need to leave you with as I end this program for now on May 26th. I don't even know what date it is today. May 27th, 2017. The main point I'd like to make is that when I come to the microphone, I've been coming to the microphone all this time, whether it's on redstatetalkradio.com or maybe you were listening to me before that, I think that I always come to it as a good guy, as knowing that I am a good person, not a perfect person. There are no perfect humans. There are no perfect persons or anybody like that. There are no perfect dogs or perfect cats, perfect giraffes, perfect elements. It's just not there's just nothing. No living thing is like that. But I think I come to you as a good person, and I think that I know what it takes to be a good person. And if you don't know, I don't drink, haven't had a sip of alcohol in years, never been drunk, never had a buzz. I know Donald Trump hasn't either, and we'll get to all of that. And I've never done drugs, never smoked a cigarette. I just have stayed away from this stuff, not because necessarily I'm a goody two-shoes. I'm a good person, but I'm not a prude either. So believing that I'm a good person, I am worried about conservatism because I believe that the good people within it have changed. I think that there is something that has gone on. I think that it can be displayed in a lot of different ways. That whether it's the voting for Donald Trump or, you know, the recent, you know, this attack that this politician in Montana, I guess he ended up winning last night, you know, what he did to that reporter, and then all these conservatives saying that, you know, they agree with what he did attacking this reporter, on and on and on. That is what is that kind of behavior, those kind of thoughts, that kind of self-righteousness that we think that we have been abused for so long that it then means that we get to do anything, that anything that we do is right to get back at those people who wronged us. It's as if none of us know the story of Moby Dick, which is really, which is a story, although people think of The Well, it's really a story about what happens when you want revenge. Captain Ahab wanted revenge against The Well at any cost. He was willing to kill his crewmates, his fellow sailors, and everything to get revenge on Moby Dick, this whale that had harmed him years before. And in the end, all he did was destroy his friends and himself. That's where I think conservatism is. That's where I think that although we believe we are on this self-righteous mission, or this righteous mission, to sort out the media, to destroy liberalism and everything else, this has begun to feel more like revenge to me. It just has. That it's win at any cost, vote for any politician at any cost, all in the belief that that somehow will set everything right. It's not. It's not. Us going after the media and the way that it's been talked about, I'd say within the last 5 to 10 years specifically, but it's got started way before that. We are no different than Captain Ahab in Moby Dick. Although you can understand, you know, whaling back at that time when that book was written was a respected profession. There's no, at the time, I guess not these days, but back then it was a respected profession. There were a lot of ways, things that a civilization could use with the body of a whale, the blubber, etc. So there was nothing wrong with Captain Ahab wanting to kill a whale. Nothing wrong with it. Now, granted, like I said, these days, 2017, whaling is seen, it's illegal in many countries because of risk of extinction, and that's a whole different discussion. But back when Moby Dick was written in the 1800s by Herman Melville, it was a respected profession. Many men were engaged in that. There were all sorts of other businesses that lived off the hunting and killing of whales. And it was perfectly fine to do that. So him doing that generally in that book, there was nothing wrong with him wanting to kill a whale. That was his job. That was his business. But what happened with Captain Ahab is he made it personal. He made it personal. And that's what destroyed him. And that is what has happened with us and going after liberals and going after the media and what, whoever else. And we want, and the, if the reason, the reason you want to find the one more reason the conservatism hasn't been successful, even though we have history and facts and logic and everything on our side, is because we've made this fight personal. We have, you know, now it's, you know, we've gotten to the point as conservatives where your average conservative, you could have a news story that speaks badly about some Republican politician, conservative politician, whether it's true or not. It's gotten to the point where your average conservative takes that personally. Even though the story isn't about him or her, or anything connect any about their family, about their friends, anything. It's a story about a politician, and suddenly everybody's up, you know, up in a huff. This stuff has to end. What they are doing is not personal. It's wrong. They're lying. But they would be doing this against anybody. This is not personal. You know, this is why I have tried to, you know, said something that I guess rang true with some of my listeners at one time, is that you do not have to hate something to defeat it. In fact, hating something only makes it more likely that you are going to make mistakes. And you're going to let your emotions get in the way of your better judgment. this is the direction that conservatism is headed. And it's being headed up by a guy, Donald Trump, who perfectly exemplifies that. Anything that doesn't go his way, he takes personally. And this is what has caused him to become, at 70 years old, no different than a 15-year-old throwing tantrums. And too many conservatives have gone along with it. I think that, you know, this comes back to something else that I've talked about desperation. You're so desperate to make these people pay. You know, you get the feeling now, I get the feeling, that it's not enough now that these, that the, some reporters are proven to be liars or anything else. I guess now you want them beat up too. Should we throw them in jail while we're at it? I just want to know. Is it not enough that they've proven to be liars over and over and over? The problem with that is that you talk about them enough, people will start actually having sympathy for them, which is, you know, another part of this. And I remind you that despite Fox News having all those great ratings for all those years, MSNBC and CNN has now passed Fox News up. So whatever you thought you were doing, you as a regular conservative, or for all of you conservative media members who have been out there for a long time, and you thought that you were delegitimizing liberal media and everything, you haven't touched it. The problem is, you probably aren't going to change your ways at all. You're still going to go after this like some, once again, like Captain Ahab. And I think I said this at one time, although it hasn't come up recently, that it's obvious to me what is, it became obvious to me, I don't know when, but it became obvious to me as to why a lot of these conservative media leaders, Rush Limbaugh, Lauren Ingram, Sean Hannity, going, you know, all these people, Ann Coulter, have been on this attack of media for so long. It really isn't about conservatism. It's really about these people. I don't know exactly when it hit me. It hit me within this last election campaign, so let's say within the last 2 years, that I finally figured out that the reason they were trying to, you know, make their listeners rise up and everything is not because the media is liars. It really has to do with the personal attacks that have put upon them over the years. This isn't about them lying about conservatives or conservatism, the ideology, the theory of conservatism, and limited government and rights and all of that. It was really about what these other media members said about them, and they wanted all of their listeners to come to their defense. That's different. It became very obvious to me to that in this election cycle. What they wanted, what they portrayed for so many years as, once again, being a righteous job of pointing out who the liars are in our media. Once again, getting back to the Captain Ahab example where he's just a whaler and he's going out to kill a whale. Really underneath, in Captain Ahab's case, he was going after revenge, which is something different. And now you find out that all these people who have made all this money off of reverse mortgages and selling gold and everything else, really the reason they were going after the media is what the media was, what they thought the media was doing to them personally. And because too many conservatives feel like they have to be so loyal, and we, once again, we see that, which to me is, you know, to these people, even when they're wrong, this is what you get. And you people continue to wonder why we don't win. Why we don't make progress. Why we can look back over the last 25 years and point out that, you know what? I think that we've lost ground. And all of you want to keep doing the same thing. And I hate to tell you this, but Donald Trump is more of the same thing. He convinced you he was a new kind of politician. He's not a new kind of leader, a new kind of this, a new kind of that. I made a statement that I recorded on video back in October of 2015, not 2016, 2015, that I stated that if everybody running for president on the Republican side, Donald Trump is the most mainstream, most establishment of all of them. Do you now see what I mean? You know, all this stuff about drain the swamp and everything, but you were so caught up in the revenge, you would listen to anybody. And if that's not going to change, then conservatism, if you're just going to continue to do this, however old you are, if you're 50 and you're going to live to 80, 30 more years, 40 more years, 50 more years, whatever. If you're going to just continue to think like that, then we're going to continue to lose. It's amazing to me how more people don't understand that the track the conservatism is on a losing track. Not necessarily, you could talk all about one about Republicans winning races and everything else, but the movement of conservatism in this country is losing. And because of that, that means the United States is losing. Because without conservatism, all we are is Europe. That's all we are. And there will end up in the end not being very much difference. Now, for a lot of liberals, that'll be just fine with them. Is that fine with you? You know, I've done my best on this podcast to try to convince you of that. Even though I know that I'm in somewhat of a minority on conservative shows, on redstatetalkradio.com, on podcasts, everything else. But I still believe that. You know me, I don't give a dang what anybody else thinks. If I think they're right, I'll say so. If they think they're wrong, I'll say that as well. I'm not here to get along. I'm not here. I was never here on this microphone to kiss all of your butts. This is serious. This isn't, you know, this show isn't about video games and movies and rating movies and rating the new Spider-Man trailer that's out or talking about disc golf or some sport. This is serious business. This is the fate of a country. This is the fate of the world. This is a fight against evil and everything else. And I can't believe that I know people know that. I know all of those people who are conservative who think differently on Donald Trump, for example, know that. Then it's bizarre to me then that these people then also want their butts kissed. If something is serious, then there shouldn't be any butt kissing. There should only be truth. There should only be telling your listeners what they need, not what they want to hear, but what they need to hear. I happen to believe that too many conservatives have become complete spoiled brats. And I think that is reflected in who the major leaders still are in conservatism. From Rush, Sean, Laura, and spoiled brats. Not one ounce of humbleness in them. Not one sense, 1 ounce of self-deprecating humor. I'm going to keep talking about that. I'm going to keep thinking that I'm not going to keep talking about, well, in my personal life, I keep talking about it. You just won't hear it. But, you know, self-deprecating humor is an attractive quality to me. And, you know, I'm a straight guy. I'm attracted to women. And you know, that's one of those, I think that guys are more likely to have that quality than women are. Women are much more concerned about their public persona. And I think that women are much more worried about staying in fashion and trendy and everything than men ever are. And so that self-deprecating quality isn't as displayed in women as I think it is in men. That's been my assessment. But I know that when I've run across the woman who isn't fun, who isn't afraid of making fun of herself, that is an attractive quality to me. It's a good quality where somebody has enough confidence in themselves. It's not like a really, it's really just, you know, making jokes about themselves. It shows that somewhere down deep, they're a confident person, that they know who they are. They're not afraid to speak the truth. They do not believe that they are above anybody. They're just another person, but they are good. They are solid. They're loyal, etc. This is what has continued to bother me about Donald Trump. Has bothered me about Rush Limbaugh, about Sean Hannity, about Laura Ingraham. They're not going to make any jokes about themselves unless it's showing how much better they are than other people. That's when they joke about themselves, to point out how much money they have or their private jet or whatever else. It's never the opposite direction. And when I see this, I get concerned. I think that I know these people even before I met them, and I'll probably never meet them. But I think I know who they are. They are so caught up in their own stuff that they can't see past the nose on their face. And these are the types of people who are now leading the Republican Party or conservatism in the United States. And once again, you wonder why we don't win more. You know, and see, this is so amazing because you look at other facets of American culture, whether, like sports. For example, last night, Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins beat the Ottawa Senators in double overtime to get to the Stanley Cup Finals. When you hear Sidney Crosby talk, the best hockey player on the face of the earth, and I'm not even that big of a hockey fan. Now, he's probably not as good as Wayne Gretzky or Mario Lemieux, but he's pretty good. Now, granted, the game has changed since those guys played, but he's pretty good. Humble, soft-spoken. When he talks, he speaks for the entire sport of ice hockey, not just in the United States, not just in Canada, but in the world. Humble, soft-spoken, leader, works harder than anybody else. Supportive as of his teammates, doesn't need the accolades. All he wants to do is win. All he wants to do is play by the rules. You think about somebody else, maybe a little more controversial. Tom Brady. I don't like the guy, but I'm a little biased because I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. But anytime he's out there talking about winning the Super Bowl or whatever, total deflection. When people call him the greatest of all time, total deflection to his teammates. Always. Always. And all good leaders do that. All of them. But you won't find that in conservatism. You will not find that in conservative politics today. You just don't find it. Starting with Donald Trump. He loves to take the credit for things. In fact, he wants to take the credit from other people. If I know that you know what good character looks like, I know that you are into sports and you love this particular athlete, then why is it that you love all these humble athletes who defer, you know, to this person and that person? Oh, it's really not me. It's the receivers were getting open, and I, you know, it was so easy for me to hit them. That's how open they were. They know how to run routes and whatever else, whatever the talk is. But then when it comes to politics, you like the most arrogant man to ever hold the White House. And you continue to listen to people who obviously are more concerned about their pocketbook than the forwarding of conservatism in the United States. You really you're going to really have to ask yourself that question. What causes that hypocrisy in you? And I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. I'm going to continue to make my point. My point continues to be that when you give in to evil, you give in to, you know, C work instead of A plus work, when you compromise your values or whatever morals, whatever you want to call them, you deserve all of the fallout that you get from it. That's just the way life is. If you can't see that, I don't know what to tell you. If you think that it's no different than a person going on a diet, if you think that you can get skinny by eating chocolate all the time, you're going to find out that you're wrong. You deserve the weight that you put on instead of lose. And I continue to believe that this acceptance of this self-righteousness, of this revenge factor, of very flawed people, we're all going to pay for that. That's just the way the world works. No different than other countries who have accepted horrible leaders. And you don't even need to talk about Hitler. Pick one. That when these countries that are otherwise good people buy into the rantings, the personality, the cult status of some leader, all of these countries have lived to regret it. So I can't help but think the United States is going to be the same way. Now, I'm not saying that there's going to be purges or the Holocaust or anything else, but you know, we as Americans, we think the United States is different. It is. But we as people are not. We are no different than the way our brains work is no different than a Russian in 1950s Russia in the Soviet Union, or a German in a person in 1930s Germany. No different. Or 1970s in East Germany. Or pick one. We as people are no different. We are just as weak. We are just as prone to falling into the same types of need for control, need for revenge. We want to know what everybody else is doing. We want to spy on people. We want to make other people pay. It's not enough that we just try to beat them at the box office. We have to make them suffer. It's not enough that we think the media is lying to us. We want to make them suffer. We want to see CNN go out of business. We want to see its CEO and all its reporters broke on the side of the road living under an underpass. These kinds of thoughts and behaviors and thinking it's okay to rough up a reporter like recently happened is not going to make them worse. It's going to make us worse. And I continue to believe that when you compromise your values, no matter if, you know, going back to the 2016 election, when you compromise your values, voting for one idiot instead of another idiot, you become an idiot as well. I don't know why anybody can't figure that out. You know, sometimes not voting sends a message just as much as voting does. And what do I want to say about this? You know, I think the difference that I've had in my life is that I've lived a little bit of a different life than most people. I learned early on that I was not going to be able to work in a hierarchical type of situation, like in a corporation where you start at the bottom and work your way up and you have to go play golf on Sundays and you go get the boss coffee and everything. That was never going to work for me for a variety of reasons. And I had a little bit of a sample of that when I moved to Las Vegas in 1998. I was 27 years old and got the field consultant job and had to train for it and everything starting in July of 98. And I worked there till April of 99. I figured out real quick that if this is what it takes, if this is what every other corporation in the United States of the world is like, then I'm just not going to cut it. I am going to be a basket case very quickly. Why? You know what it seems to me is it's, you know, and maybe this is reflective in my politics and everything that I'm saying here. I don't go along with backstabbing and kissing butt and everything as well as other people do. Now, I know people say that, and they're everyday. Well, I don't put up with any stuff. And then you find out that the way they've worked themselves up into the position is, you know, doing everything that it takes, even saying things that they don't mean, to get where they are. So people talk a good game regarding this, but very few people practice that. Because nobody wants to come out and say, you know what, I'm an ass kisser. Nobody ever wants to admit to that. Even though we know the world is full of them. It's like my example. The world is full of a bunch of bad drivers. But if you ask every single driver in the world, how do you think your driving is? They all say, oh, I'm a great driver. Even though we know that there are some horrible drivers out there. I've seen the YouTube videos. It's the same way with butt kissing. It's the, you know, it's the, all of this. This politicking. And I can tell you that I never could go along with that. And I think that may be the difference between my attitude toward politics and your average conservatives. Because most other people, even though they may say that they haven't butt kissed, that they've worked to get, they know that they've done some things that have compromised their values to get where they are. In fact, most people have probably compromised their values at one time or another to make a sale, to get a new customer. You know, to do anything just to get through that day. And so they extrapolate that out into their politics. That we're going to have to compromise here. And they're thinking, looking back, well, look what I did. I had to compromise here and it moved me ahead. I compromised there and it moved me ahead. I charged something to somebody when I shouldn't have. I did this and lied about this, signed something that I shouldn't have. You know, it was, you know, not that these people are bad people. They're not. They would say that they had to do what they had to do at that second. But really, most people, what they're doing in their everyday lives, no offense, but that doesn't amount to much. They're just pushing paper. Now, we need accounting firms and we need Walmarts and all of these things. But all of that is insignificant compared to war. It's insignificant compared to terrorism. It's insignificant compared to being, you know, protecting babies from their mothers who want to kill them. It's in all that retail service, all that stuff is insignificant. It doesn't mean anything. Walmart could go away tomorrow. And people would eventually adapt. Just like JCPenney's is going away. Just like Montgomery Ward's went away. Just like Ben Franklin's went away. All of these iconic brands and new ones will live. But in politics, it is serious business. And so values cannot be compromised. But people think because they've gotten ahead in this business or that business because of working the angles and things, that that's the way you need to do politics. In fact, you think of the world politics, and that's what everybody thinks of. Kissing butt, you do this, I scratch my back, you scratch my back, I scratch your back, everything else. Well, it doesn't have to be that way, because being that way is what's caused everything to be a mess in the first place. The problem is, in politics, the fallout from doing things the wrong way and compromising values, the fallout is much worse than compromising values in some workplace, in some accounting firm, in some school, or anything like that. So you have to pick and choose what's important, what's not important. And for me, what I discovered early on while working at 7-Eleven is that I saw that a lot of my fellow employees, co-workers having the same position as me, were lying their butts off just to get through a week, just to get to Friday. That's what they were doing. And they had no conscience about it at all. Zero. Zero. And the fact is, I did. I said, I cannot continue to do this. This is crazy. I know these other people were doing it. I know they're lying. I know what it takes to do the job. I'm doing the job that they're doing. They're lying just as I am, and they're just going about their business, and maybe some of them still work for 7-Eleven 19 years later, 18 years later. Have moved up, maybe they're CEO of the company for all I know. But I'm just not like that. I'm just not. I'm not saying I'm perfect. But what I think is that people compromise in politics because they know they compromise in their personal lives. And I would say that their personal lives don't mean anything compared to the fate of the world. You know, these are the tough choices that we need to make. And I know it probably kills you. You know, to say that you should have not voted. You know, you can't even fathom the thought that you should have sat out that election between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. You went and voted because Hillary Clinton is so bad. Once again, this is getting back to the Ahab analogy. This isn't about killing a whale for revenge. This is business. This is serious, serious business. And so not voting for Hillary Clinton shouldn't have been personal, but you made it personal. She didn't make it personal. You made it personal. She doesn't know you. She can't make it personal because she doesn't know you. You're making it personal because you think that you know her. Yes, she's a very bad person. Donald Trump, he's a very bad person too. It's funny how that never occurred to you that he was the same. And you can't continue to make choices like this. So, I think that's why I had to go on a little bit of a different track with my employee, you know, even to this day with podcasting and my other show. I have to do things where I know that I'm not compromising my values. It's just the way I am. So I've had jobs where they're very autonomous and I don't have to fill out much paperwork. And I can go in and do the job that needs to be done without having to cut corners or anything else. And I'm very good that I work on my own. You know, I had a job where a boss could send me to LA, down to Phoenix, up into Utah to fix things. And there was no cheating. Just bring the right parts, know what you're doing, get it done, and come home. I think that my values have kept me from things as well. I think it's kept me from being more prosperous. I'm just going to be honest. I know of programs out there, podcasts, they have fake followers, they have fake downloads, they have fake listeners, they get fake likes, they have fake. All why? So they can get sponsored for their show and they make money. That goes on in political shows, it goes on in true crime shows, trust me, I just know. It's going on all over the place. Those people don't care because they've rationalized that it's okay. Me? Can't do that. Can't do it. Once again, I am not a goody two-shoes. I do not think that I am somebody special. I just think this is the way everybody should be. And that's why I continue to say that all of you who have fallen into the grasp of Donald Trump, you as conservatives are wrong. Wrong. All of you who want revenge on the media, you're wrong. You just are. We can defeat them without getting nasty, without wanting revenge. But revenge feels so good. And in fact, that's the reason that Captain Ahab does it. Revenge can make you feel very, very, once again, self-righteous. Revenge can fill you up with all of these great feelings, all of these dreams of how you are going to make your enemy suffer. The point is to not make them suffer. The point is just to beat them. You know, we as the United States, when we defeated the Nazis, we didn't take all of their generals out and torture them to death. We didn't torture their soldiers or anything else. And even the ones who we knew were the bad guys, Heinrich Himmler, the rest of them, they even got to have trials and voice their side of it before we executed them. Same way with the Japanese and everything. You know, every other country the United States has defeated. We didn't rub them into the ground. In fact, that's what happened after World War I that led to World War II, because the Allied forces defeating Germany in World War I belittled Germany so much. We actually inflamed those people to come back in the 1930s, and we know what happened there. Do we as conservatives not understand this? That we don't need reporters to be beaten up and to be demonized and to be made fun of and everything else. It's just enough to call them liars. The problem is we have a hard time doing that anymore, is because too many conservatives have embraced liars themselves. Between Tomi Lahren and Alex Jones and the rest of them. So, you know, you have to remember something that, once again, going back to World War II as an example, the Allied forces did not have a minister of propaganda to make its own people feel better about what was going on in the war. Germany, Italy, the Soviet Union, they were the ones, well, technically, I guess Russia was our ally, but they were the ones who had ministers of propaganda. The only kind of propaganda that the United States and England put out, Australia, Canada put out, France, was propaganda to change the other side's minds and to fool them, not to fool their own people. But we have ministers of propaganda now in the conservative movement who are out there to do nothing but to fool fellow conservatives. And I don't know. I don't know when it's going to end. It's not going to end today. It's not going to end next week. I don't know when. But in because of that, we have lost our moral way. If Ronald Reagan were alive today, 60 years old, or however old he was when he made the Time for Choosing speech, he would look at what we are doing and be disgusted. We are not happy warriors anymore. We are warriors bent on revenge. And revenge can burn people out. And that's, I think, what you're seeing right now. I talked about it a couple days ago with this new budget. Donald Trump's allegedly going to slash all these programs. No, he's not. If you conservatives believe it. It's obvious to me that that budget is meant to hurt people who don't vote and protect people who do vote. That's not the way we budget in the United States, but a lot of conservatives are going to go along with it. So before we can think about defeating liberalism, not getting revenge on it, but defeating it, I still say that we have to fix our own house. Our house is in disarray. You walk inside it, there's clothes everywhere, there's dirty dishes in the sink. You know, the chairs are toppled all over. There's, what is it? LG or whatever it is growing in the bathroom. And we want to point at the other side and say, look how disarray they are. Look how bad they are. We have lost the moral, not, you know, self-righteousness and having the moral high ground are two different things. We have lost the moral high ground. Although we may have the right ideas about being pro-life and pro-gun and everything else, our character has suffered, and it is possible. And I think that's still something that a lot of conservatives don't understand, is that you can be pro-life and be for gun ownership and understand rights and everything and still be a horrible person. And I think that that is what's going on. We have a lot of people who, because it's, once again, conservatism has become a checkbox type of ideology. Oh, I'm pro-life, so I'm dollies, I must be a conservative. There is an element of character and values and morals that go along with it that is lacking on the other side. They don't give a dang about that. They don't believe in God, so it's hard for them to talk about morals. Everything is relative over there. And that has seeped into us. It's not enough to just have the right ideas in your head and be able to say, yep, I'm a conservative today. Look, I think this and I think that and I think that. There is a moral element that must be a part of it as well. And that has been lacking for a long time. And its ultimate display was in how many conservatives went and voted for Donald Trump in November 2016. And I'm always going to say that. That's what we have to give back, get back. That moral compass. People know the ideology, know our ideology. They know what we think. They know that we're pro-life. They know that we're pro-gun. They know all of those things. The other side knows all of those things. But the way you beat the other side is being a better person, which is a lot tougher than having the right ideas in your head. And the right, I should say, the right, the being on the correct side of a political issue. And that's what I will, as I leave you the microphone, I've got about a minute left. That's what I want to leave you with. That if we want to beat liberalism, we have to be better people. And we cannot get suckered in by bad people, no matter if they are saying what we like. We have to be able to see through that. And that is something new. That's something new to conservatives. It's not something that I don't think your 1990s or your early 2000s conservative person had to worry about. We have to worry about it now. We have to think about it now. So we got to start doing it, or we will continue to get our butts kicked from now to the end of the United States. It's just the way it is. That's life. That's reality. And I got to go. I'm going to post this last program on Podomatic and iTunes. I'm sure RedStateTalkRadio.com will play it tonight. And after that, this microphone for this show will go dark for a while. There won't be anything going on my Twitter account. And so at some point, I will probably be back. I just have to see if I can fit it into my schedule with the other things that I will be doing. But I will be doing something in politics somewhere. It just won't be daily. It won't be this. Maybe something weekly. We'll just have to see. But I got to go. It's been great talking to all of you. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.